This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. In Malaysia, the death toll from the COVID-19 pandemic has been quite staggering, and it recently surpassed 11,000 deaths, and we are reporting upwards of 100 to 300 deaths a day in the past week. And that's 11,000 people whose deaths have left a huge hole in the lives of their families, their friends, and this includes children who may have lost one or both of their parents or caregiver to COVID-19. And I even came across a recent study in the journal Lancet, which estimated that for every two people who die of COVID-19, one child is left orphaned. And this group of children has even been referred to as COVID orphans. And I guess having that term really shows us how serious, how widespread this problem is. So then if we look at the situation in Malaysia, we have been seeing reports of children, of siblings who have unfortunately lost their parents to the disease. But what are we doing to protect and to provide for these children? What can we do to mitigate the economic, developmental, and even psychological impact that they will face because of their situation? So here to dive into this with me today is my guest, Sharmila Sekrin, Chairperson of Voice of the Children. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sharmila.
Hi, Suan. Thank you. And thank you for raising this issue. It's such an important issue for us to discuss.
And perhaps let's just sort of set the basis before we start, right? When we see of articles or we hear of people who refer to COVID orphans, I guess who exactly are these children that we are referring to?
So one of the most tragic consequences that has come out of this pandemic and the high number of adult deaths has really been orphanhood from children. And this really has been defined by UNICEF, which is the primary organization, United Nations Fund for Children, as a child who is bereft of one or more or both of his or her parents or primary caregiver of the child from COVID. So this could be parents, it could be grandparents, custodial grandparents, or it could be some other primary caregiver who has passed away from COVID.
So in the Malaysian system, you know, what happens to the child if that happens, if they lose their parent or their guardian, you know, who then takes responsibility or custodianship?
Well, you know, it really depends on whether it's one or both parents and, you know, the situation around the child. There's no kind of one answer fits all. Mm-hmm. But generally, one would try to have the child looked after by a family member. So whether it's another parent or a grandparent or an aunt or uncle or, you know, someone like that, as the initial kind of right primary caregiver moving on. Before a formal guardianship is put into place. But very often, and especially now with the movement control order and the travel restrictions, very often these children are finding themselves in some kind of place of institution, whether it's a home or an NGO home, a caregiver home. And that brings about its own struggles and problems. But ultimately, that is what would happen to the child. The child would be taken into the care and custody of JKM, the welfare department, before it's decided what would happen to the child.
You know, I've sort of read some articles and heard from experts that sort of the institutionalization of orphans is problematic. You know, sending children to orphanages could be harmful for them. What are your thoughts on that?
Gosh, you know, it's hugely problematic. In terms of, you know, the issue with institutionalism, really, that is something we would really want to try and avoid for a child to be institutionalized because of the kinds of impact that something like that being institutionalized could have on a child. Very often, children who've been institutionalized do not receive the kind of support that they need, both in terms of physical care as well as the mental and psychological care and support required. And more so under a circumstance like this, where the child is going through a very, very tragic kind of experience. Yeah. So a lot of these children, we then will see falling into risky behavior, mm-hmm. being it raises, for example, the risk of the child experiencing mental health problems, physical, emotional, sexual violence, the child falling to poverty. It can also, without the right kind of support, raise risks of suicide, especially among adolescents, adolescent pregnancy. The children also can be at risk of falling into the hands or being enticed by gangs and, being subject to trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the issues which result in children being institutionalized without the right kind of support. And it can also result in developmental delays as well as, like I said, elevated abuse.
Mm. All right. So then looking at the current situation with COVID-19 now, unfortunately, the situation is quite dire. We are seeing reports of hundreds of deaths a day. Is our system able to handle the potential rise in number of children who require that support after, unexpectedly losing their parents or caregivers to COVID-19?
Sadly, no, the system is unable to support these children. Currently, the welfare department and the social workers are terribly overburdened with so much work. They've been overburdened anyway to start with, and the current situation has not helped. And the length of time that we have been struggling and laboring under the current pandemic has not helped in any way in terms of welfare. So what we're often also seeing is a lot of these children being left at home alone for long periods of time,
mm-hmm.
before help or some kind of assistance is provided to them. So especially if they're older children, they've been left to care for themselves, hopefully with the support of neighbors or, family members who may be nearby, but generally very much left on their own before they're taken into some kind of care. The welfare department has, even prior to, the pandemic, been laboring with skeletal staff and burdened with an excessive caseload. In some areas outside the Klang Valley, in some of the smaller districts, one JKM staff has to look after not just children, but single parents, OKUs, people with disabilities, both physical and mental disabilities, children who come into conflict with the law, So they've already got an excessive caseload. We're just adding on to that caseload, which they can barely cope with. So unfortunately, they have been unable to provide the necessary care and protection for children under the circumstances that we're experiencing now. The call to professionalize social workers is more than 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
And we still have not seen that happen. And we really, this pandemic has revealed how weak our system is, how under-resourced it is, and how unable it is to cope with the needs of our society and our community, especially vulnerable children.
Mm. So what are the sort of immediate short-term needs that, these children who are facing the consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic, what are their needs, their immediate needs that need to be addressed?
For a start, we have to remember that in some cases, parents have been removed from the home because they're positive, mm-hmm. very suddenly. It could happen at night or whatever it is. And very often the children are already left alone in the home without any kind of adult supervision or care. So the primary focus needs to be the day-to-day care of the child. And then a very immediate concern would be their entire funeral, the conducting of the funeral, the expenses associated with that. And of course, there's added burden if it's more than one family member who's passed on. And what we're hearing is that very often family members are passing on, passing away within days or weeks of each other. So there's very, very little time to even, before one has happened, the next thing happens. There's very little time to address the situation for the children left behind. And then, the need to kind of ensure that the child's life is maintained with minimal disruption. Mm-hmm. One of the other problems is, of course, the fact that if there are no parents or primary caregivers left within the vicinity, then the child may have to go to, caregivers outside in a different jurisdiction, mm-hmm. which may result in the child having to change school. So already their life is disrupted with the loss of a parent and the primary caregiver. The added complication will be everything around the child then becomes like an upheaval. Goes into upheaval, and everything that provides stability and constancy for the child is then disrupted. So we need to ensure that that doesn't happen, and that life is able to continue more or less on an even keel. They can still go to school, they can still have their friends and the teachers that they know and trust, because these children are going to go through a grieving process, which mm-hmm. will take time, and it's good to have people who already know them and understand and can identify the changes in their behavior to understand whether they're going through grief, whether they need further support and psychological kind of counseling or help. And then, of course, there is the longer term care and guardianship support that needs to be given, mm-hmm. as well as immediate and long-term grief counseling, psychological support. Like I said, we want to try and avoid institutionalism as much as possible, which one of the big problems with the pandemic is the fact that a lot of parents, a lot of families have not prepared for the eventuality of sudden death. Mm-hmm. And especially what we're seeing now with younger people, which means they're young parents passing away. A lot of them may not have, for example, prepared wills. And there's that whole process of having to get, the estate dealt with and the support that children need to ensure that, that is done and completed. Mm-hmm. And basically, who's going to be the secondary caregiver if the primary caregiver is not there? One of the wonderful things that, my sister and brother-in-law did very early on for my nephew, their child, is to appoint a secondary caregiver. And this they did when he was 2 years old. So I'm supposed to be it. And he's aware of this. So at all times, he was aware that I was the next person closest to him, and we've kind of developed that relationship, So not to say that he won't go through grief if anything were to happen to his parents, but at least there's that certainty that, okay, this is where I turn to mm-hmm. if something bad happens, and a lot of families have not put that kind of thing in place. One of my cousins has done that as well. He's spoken to his family, the children, and ask them who they would like to go to if something happened to their parents, who they would like to turn to and feel comfortable with. It's something that, families need to think about, but especially at a time like this, where, the suddenness of the pandemic is so real for so many families. The restrictions on movement only add to the trauma, because a lot of families can't get to the children. The extended family can't get to the children. I've heard of cases where, for example, families in a different jurisdiction, a different district, a different state, try to get police permit to come down to be with the children. But they need to wait for a medical report. They need to wait for the death certificate. They then need to prove the relationship, because very often it may not be the same name. The child and the family member who's trying to get to the child mm-hmm. may not have the same surname. There are all these added complications. So unfortunately, as helpful as the police have tried to be, I suppose, they're concerned about people not complying strictly with SOPs. And so they've also made it quite difficult for family members to get to children. So, you know, the situation is quite dire, really, for many children.
There's so many aspects to this that you would never expect a child to have to deal with, right? Whether it's a younger child or a teenager, things like, you know, when you mentioned things like managing the funeral, managing perhaps the estate of, you know, the parents who have passed on, and, you know, sort of figuring out their own day-to-day care. I mean, these are all things that you would expect they would expect to already have been cared for the children, not for them to sort of figure it out on their own.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have to remember that under normal circumstances, even, you know, as an adult, if we're bereaved, families come together. And, you know, for example, if a woman loses her husband, families come together, her siblings, her extended family, the husband's family, all come, and everyone participates in kind of like getting stuff done for the funeral. But when you don't have that support, simply because of restrictions, movement restrictions, like I said, you know, and it's hard enough for an adult to have to go through something like this at a time like this, you know, a bereavement at a time like this. So, I mean, I my heart goes out to these children. I just cannot even begin to imagine what they're going through and having to deal with all on their own without the necessary, you know, physical support, just having someone, just having an adult next to you, having someone next to you, even just holding your hand and, you know, not doing much else. But even that means so much. Mm-hmm. And these children are going through this so alone. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the other things that we have to also remember is that the whole grieving process starts with having a body to grieve over, mm-hmm. going through funeral service and that whole process, the whole funeral service and burial or cremation or whatever it is, all helps towards the grieving process. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that because of if someone passes away from COVID, then the family just cannot be around. There's only one person who can identify the body, and then the body for non-Muslims is cremated, for Muslims as a burial, but it's all being done without the family around. And so, you know, to even begin to grieve and come to terms with the loss is just so much harder if you're a child having lost your primary caregiver and not being able to grieve and go through that funeral process. It's, you know, really painful and traumatic.
Would this situation sort of be even worse for children who are from sort of the B40 group, for example, or even marginalized communities?
Definitely, because I think so much more is thrown into upheaval for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think we have to accept that the whole grieving process and the trauma that comes with this kind of loss is going to be felt by everyone, all children, but at least some of the risks are lessened for children who come from kind of more functional families. You know, children who are already living in poverty have a greater risk of, one, ending up in an institution, and two, ending up where in family poverty, where the entire family falls into poverty. Very often, other family members, if they're from that B40 group, then very often the entire family, the extended family as well, is from B40. And taking on the burden, and I use this word very lightly in inverted commas, burden of added children into the family and having to care for them could likely push the extended family into greater poverty, which they are already experiencing.
All right. Let's go for a quick break, Sharmila. And after that, you know, I want to ask you what policies or what solutions we can put in place to better support these children. I'm speaking today to Sharmila Sekaran, the chairperson of Voice of the Children, and we are addressing the issue of COVID orphans, children who have lost a parent or a caregiver or both to COVID-19 and sort of what are the consequences of that situation that these children are put in and why we need to do better to address the situation. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me on Zoom today is Shramla Sekaran, Chairperson of Voice of the Children, and we are taking a look at the children who are unfortunately put in very difficult situations after having lost a parent or both parents or caregiver to COVID-19, how, you know, the situation can be traumatic to them, how children are suddenly thrust into a situation where they have to figure out things like their own day-to-day care, funeral proceedings, you know, managing the grieving process when extended family members may not be easily around to provide that physical support. And that's what we were talking about before the break. And now, you know, Sharmila, based on what we know of our current system, right? You've already said that it is unfortunately a system that is unable to cope or will find it difficult to cope with this sudden rise in children who need support. But what can be done? What is feasible to support these children? And, you know, what sort of intervention do we need right now?
Thank you, Sue Ann. One of the things that we have to put in place is to identify a primary agency that is going to take responsibility for this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the moment, the request has been for MOH to alert the authorities as to the children who may be orphaned due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But really, MOH are limited. You know, their focus has to be on the care and treatment of the patients under their care and jurisdiction. Really, this falls into the purview of the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, and more specifically the Welfare Department, who need to be at the forefront of this issue and need to be far more proactive in tackling the issue, you know, and they need to do it quietly, just, you know, head down and get on with it, realizing the long-term impact of not handling a situation like this. You know, given the number of children who are coming up or who are falling into this category of COVID orphans,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not one or two children. If we look at the statistics, I mean, we don't have national Malaysian statistics, but if we look at international statistics, we're talking about something like 1 in 1,000 children, say, for example, who are becoming orphaned due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite aside from children who are orphaned through other circumstances, like, you know, accidents or you know, a parent who's unwell, you know, cancer or whatever it is, and they've become orphaned through that. We're talking very specifically like COVID orphans. So, you know, all of a sudden we're going to have that many more orphans in society, in community, at a given time. So really we need to think about the comprehensive plan needed to take care of these children. And one really has to be devised to see these children through the whole funeral process, their bereavement, grief counseling, ensure that carers are arranged for them. If necessary, foster families. We need to ensure that these children do not fall into long-term institutionalization. And most importantly, that they continue to have access to proper education and, you know, and surrounded by love, because that is the thing that they will be most lacking in terms of the loss of a primary caregiver. So MOH have that role to play because they are the ones who actually go into a home and remove a person who may be unwell due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So they would, at first instance, be the people who would know that, oh, you know, there are children left alone in the home when they remove one or two parents,
mm-hmm.
or more primary caregivers. But, you know, very quickly, this needs to be escalated to JKM, the Ministry of Women, and an initial list of all orphans, COVID-19 orphans, needs to be made. They need to ensure that these children are immediately supported. And this is where, like I was saying, the child protectors can also be called in, the ministry needs to also set up a database of private counselors, not just rely on their own counselors, but those in private practice as well, to be brought in and mapped. So that, because, you know, COVID has no boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be just in a city center or in an urban area. It's going to be all over the place. So it's important for the ministry to have, for welfare department to have a database of NGOs, child protectors, counselors throughout the country mapped that they can call into service and, you know, to support the children and guide them through the whole bereavement. As well as to very quickly identify who the next of kin are and to contact those next of kin and to facilitate the next of kin coming to be with the children. Like I was explaining earlier, the police require a lot of documentation to prove the need to travel, the need to cross boundaries. And, you know, this is where JKM or another government agency would be able to support an application to travel with the police to be able to get next of kin to come to support the children more readily and more easily. And then also to ensure that, you know, where there aren't next of kin or where that is going to be problematic in terms of the child being supported by the next of kin, to very quickly find appropriate caregivers, identify who the secondary caregivers are and to call them into action as well. And then there needs to be very determined, concerted and kind of disciplined, proper follow-up to ensure that these children are continue to be supported, protected, and are not abused or neglected. You know, it is very easy when families are forced to take on the children of another family member, but they are not equipped to do so. For those children, when they come in, to then suffer abuse and neglect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there needs to be a system to follow up to ensure that these children are not exposed to whether it's physical, emotional, psychological, or sexual violence. And then most importantly, there needs to be a budget set aside. So this needs to go into the national budget for, you know, the coming year, if it hasn't already been done. In fact, we know it hasn't been done, but it needs to be definitely a budget item. Mm-hmm. The government must aside funds to care for these children's education and their other longer term needs to ensure that they still remain safe and protected and their well-being is seen to, at the very least, until they reach the age of majority, which is 18 here.
That's, you know, quite a comprehensive list you've noted, Sharmila. You know, I think especially it all also boils down to having, you know, how important that financial aid is in it right now, because we're seeing so many people saying that people are struggling to put food on the table, and, you know, having a budget set aside for these children also helps to ensure their future, that they have a future down the line. But what are sort of the possible ramifications, you know, in the medium or perhaps in longer term, if we don't put in these interventions, if we don't put in place these interventions, you know, how will it impact this generation of children?
You know, absolutely, Suan, you know, really good question. And that is the thing, that when we put aside, you know, set aside money, funds, a budget to support these children, what we are actually doing is investing not only in their longer term well-being, but also we're investing into the nation, because if we do not take the right kind of protective steps for the children, these children, what would happen is we will see more and more people, children, as they become adults and into their, you know, early adulthood and even into later adulthood, suffering serious mental health issues, having chronic illnesses, more at risk of infectious diseases, and also the whole issue of high risk of suicide as well as adolescent pregnancies. So if we want to protect against some of what we term in inverted commas as social ills like adolescent pregnancies, mm-hmm. then what we need to do is invest into the situation now to at least minimize that risk or address it. So you know, what we're actually talking about is to ensure the longer term health of the nation by taking care of the children, these children today?
No, right now, Sharmila, we are unfortunately seeing a lot of political instability. How is the political situation affecting perhaps the government's ability to respond adequately to, you know, to this issue of COVID orphans?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, as we can see from the media, they are more concerned about duration in parliament and their office than the children. You know, it's really sad that we've not heard a single peep from the Minister of Women, Family and Community Development on the issue of COVID orphans, on the issue of the well-being of children under the current circumstances and the pandemic. You know, and it's also very telling that, you know, they have been neglecting these children. They're just not concerned about the children who are desperately in need of the protection that the primary child protector of the nation, the Minister of Women, should be giving. Sadly, the political situation is such that there has been, over the years, there's been very, very little care for children. You know, Voice of Children has been in existence for over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And every single minister we have met has been wholly disinterested in ensuring that children are protected. And this is really telling of the state of our society, that we have no care for our children. And the pandemic is just exacerbating that situation. It is really sad that we do not invest, that we do not have funds for children, that we do not find out the exact needs that the children need to be given, what they their voice to be heard, and we do not ensure the protection and well-being of our children. This will amount to national disaster in the longer term because of the domino effect. Mm-hmm. If we do not invest in the children, you know, what we will see is children who are not well-adjusted adults, children who are able to contribute to society, children who are more prone to fall into a life of crime and drugs, to becoming vulnerable to predators, to be more open and vulnerable to abuse and neglect.
I'd also like to bring up the role of civil society organizations. You know, I think in the past year and a half during the COVID-19 pandemic, we've seen so many NGOs, civil society organizations, activists sort of stepping up and, you know, helping out the community, the families, the children. What role do you see, you know, organizations like Voice of the Children and other similar organizations continue to play, but also to what extent, you know, can you keep doing this?
Thank you for that question, Swan. NGOs have been banding together. One of the good things that has come out of the pandemic, if I can say this, is mm-hmm. the fact that NGOs have realized the need to collaborate more. Mm-hmm. And there are different NGOs that specialize in different areas and are more willing to work together to provide more holistic support, in particular for children. So that's one of the positives. But, you know, the NGOs are limited in terms of their resource and reach as well. So during the movement control orders, even the NGOs struggled to get the requisite permission to go into areas where children were in need because, you know, we're treated just like any other member of society, mm-hmm. Needing the requisite police permission or movement grants, you know, permits to go through roadblocks and things like that. So there were struggles in that regard for NGOs, which the government doesn't have. You know, JKM officers were able to move a lot faster in that regard. But this is where there needs to be a whole of society approach and response and an all of government response with the willingness of the government and in particular the welfare department, JKM, to work with civil society, because civil society has stepped up in providing a lot more support. But like I said, you know, civil society needs to get information from the government. You know, we may not know when a child is going to be left alone or when a child is bereaved. That is not information that necessarily can come to civil society, obviously, or readily. Mm-hmm. But the government can set up that system where MOH gives the information to JKM. And like I said, if JKM had that database and worked on the database, called into office, called into service, members from, like I said, you know, citizen child protectors, as well as other NGOs, whether it's children's homes or organizations like Voice of the Children, and there are so many others that are working in this area. For example, there are organizations that work just very specifically on primary care, as well as children, early childhood, you know, so we're talking about kindergarten, pre-kindergarten age, and they have expertise in that area. So, you know, there are others who have counseling support within their services. So if we call all these organizations into service, you know, it will be a much more concerted response and a much more effective and efficient response. But definitely NGOs have already, you know, for example, there is a call line for adults and children. But one of the problems with that is that children need very particular kind of support when they call a call line, you know, and they need to know that they can trust the person on the other end. And there's a way of dealing with a child who calls in and eliciting the information and providing support for a child who calls in, which unfortunately, when you have a general call line, the people are not at the other end receiving the call are not equipped to deal with children, especially children who may be going through trauma and grief. So what one of the NGOs has done is they set up their own call line, which, you know, is being shared on social media and the like, called Buddy Bear. Mm-hmm. So children can call that because the government system is not working. So we can see how NGOs have really stepped up. But we also have to remember, and this is really a call out to anyone who is able to support financially, because a lot of NGOs are also struggling with financial resource simply because grants have been cut. You know, a lot of NGOs get their grants from and funds from corporations, from other individuals, from fundraisers. And, you know, obviously, for the last 2 years, we've not been able to organize any fundraisers, but certainly also corporations have cut budgets because they're tightening their belts, and that has an impact on the kind of work and level of work that NGOs are able to provide. Mm-hmm. But, you know, needless to say, a lot of the work that NGOs do is also voluntary, and that is continuing. We are relying on kind of like interns and younger people to come and support. But again, some of the issues, especially when we're talking about counseling and support for children who have been orphaned through COVID, we need a longer term view, and that is lacking. Certainly NGOs are not able to provide that in a full and complete and comprehensive way because of the follow through that is required.
Mm. And, you know, hopefully there someone is listening out there, you know, Sharmila, you've laid out this the importance of having a whole of society, a whole of government, having that partnership between civil society organizations and government agencies, as well as, you know, the things, the solutions that we can implement both in the immediate and a bit more longer term to address the issue of COVID orphans. Before I let you go, Sharmila, would you have a takeaway message for our listeners on what we've been talking about today?
Two things. One is we really need a department for children so mm-hmm. that we have a designated person looking after and looking out for children, preferably under the Prime Minister's office. But, you know, if nothing else, then maybe we can follow the pattern set by the previous administration where you had the minister looking after one category of people and the deputy minister looking after another category of people under their purview, one of which was children. And so we saw a lot more activity for children there. And the other thing is for society, please look out for the children. There are so many children in need. And the best people to contact would be JKM. Their phone numbers are all over the place. If you just Google, you'll be able to find a JKM office near you. But even so, if not JKM, then the local council office or the ADUN, your local MP, you know, reach out to them, to their office, and alert them as to the fact that there is a child in need or children in need, whether it's in need of protection or in this case, you know, in need of greater and longer term support, because they then would know how to who to contact, NGOs as well as JKM. So you know, do keep a watch out for these children and do alert us and the authorities, you know, if they need support.
All right. Thank you so much, Sharmila.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Suan. And thank you for raising an interest in this issue.
I've been speaking to Sharmila Sekran, the chairperson of Voice of the Children, and we've been discussing the issue of COVID orphans. And these are children who have lost one or both of their parents or caregivers to COVID-19. And we've been exploring the solutions or interventions that are needed to better support these children and to ensure that their future is secure. If you missed any part of today's show or you want to listen to previous Live and Learn episodes, you can look up our podcasts on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.